In this episode, you'll discover how to use Facebook ads in different stages of the buying process.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery, brought to you by Wirebuzz.
Hey-o! Thank you for joining us for the latest episode here at Video Marketing Mastery. You know, one of the topics that we discuss all the time is Facebook ads and the different stages of the buying process. And that's why Steve Hetrick, Director of Advertising at Wirebuzz, is with me. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Todd. How you doing?
It's great, man. Nice to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So, Steve, before we get started and we start talking about Facebook ads and the strategies behind it and how to use video to convert people at faster rates, give the listeners a high-level overview on some of your background, but also the companies that you've helped service.
Yeah, sure. So, my original background was infomercial marketing. I worked for an infomercial agency for many, many years and was in that world for a long time. But I've done direct mail since then. I've done broadcast TV, I've done radio, I've done print, everything from e-commerce to business to consumer advertising, B2B lead generation advertising. I've worked for kind of high-end clients like Hoover, Procter & Gamble, Prestige Brands, Proactive, the Magic Bullet Blender, yeah. It's an infomercial product, Hamilton Beach, some high-end B2B clients like Axway, which is in Phoenix, actually, yeah. And Centrify, some other, lots of
big
companies.
We're doing a Cool Sculpting campaign right now.
And a Cool Sculpting campaign, right? Absolutely. That's an active campaign right now.
That's a YouTube campaign.
We're doing it on YouTube and doing some retargeting on YouTube as well, yeah.
You know, one of the topics that we discuss all the time is Facebook ads. And this is an important topic for business. I mean, Facebook has access to 2 billion people.
Absolutely. If you're not on Facebook, you need to be. Right? Yeah.
No, if you're not on Facebook, you're probably not in the U.S.
That's right? Absolutely true.
Now, my dad recently just got on Facebook.
Yep.
And it's really interesting to see, like, who's early adopters, who are normal adopters, and who are late adopters. And very few people are still trying to adopt Facebook at this point.
Absolutely true. It's been pretty remarkable, the staying power they've had, considering all the other players that have come into the space, the Instagrams, the Vines, the Snapchats.
MySpace.
Yeah, MySpace. They're gone, but Facebook managed to stay the course and they're still very, very strong.
I was telling listeners of this podcast that I've been around in digital marketing so long that I was doing celebrity MySpace pages back in 2003 for a variety of national clients that I had. And the MySpace ecosystem is so different than what we had or what we have today. And I think the most important difference is identity. Today, you've got to use your real name. And back in the day, we all used handles.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so today, I really wanted to spend a few moments with you to talk about Facebook ads and the different stages in the buying process and how you use them differently. Can we talk about that for a little bit?
Absolutely.
All right. So right off of the bat, talk to me about the 5 stages in the buying process and how people need to differentiate the different stages.
Sure. Yeah. Depending on who you talk to, there's 4 stages, there's 6 stages. I'll actually identify 6, but one doesn't really apply to Facebook. First of which would be the kind of the problem/solution identification. That's more of inbound marketing, which I'll get to in a second. But what that means is, let's say your toilet's backed up, you need a new microwave, you need a chiropractor, you identify a problem and you're now looking for a solution. Generally speaking, when you have that kind of an issue, you're going to go and do what's called an outbound marketing search. You're going to go search for that solution. So you're going to go on Yelp, you're going to go on Google, and you're going to get either organic or paid Google returns. So that's what's called inbound marketing, because people are actively looking for you. Whereas conversely, Facebook is outbound marketing. And outbound marketing is anytime you are interrupting someone's regularly scheduled program, so to speak, and serving them some sort of an ad. So that could be a display advertising, could be Facebook ad in your news feed, it could be a TV commercial. All those are outbound marketing. So the identification of a problem usually doesn't apply to the outbound marketing that you wouldn't. So I'm going to kind of skip that on Facebook.
Outbound marketing is at its core interruptive.
Absolutely.
It interrupts the regularly scheduled program or your regularly scheduled path through the newsfeed in order to find, boom, this interruptive piece of content that's going to try to hack your attention.
Yes. And now more than ever, you have to be really smart about that, especially with Facebook, because Facebook is very saturated. And so having a really powerful image that's going to grab someone's attention, a powerful headline that's going to grab their attention is so important. And we'll be talking about, we can talk about that more later, but it's super important to have something that's really going to make them stop in their tracks and stop from scrolling down their phone on their newsfeed and look and see what you have to say.
All right. All right, let's do that. So give me an explanation on the five stages in the buying process and how people need to visualize that. What are they?
Okay, so number one would be the awareness. So this is the awareness that your product exists. And so for an example, a great tool for awareness would be videos. Videos are great for awareness, which is right up your alley, of course, Todd. But this is essentially, it's old terminology, they would call it branding. So it's making someone aware that you exist and here I am and I exist. So that's awareness. Number two would be the interest stage. So now that I'm aware that you exist, now I'm going to dig a little bit deeper into, you know, who you are, what's your product and service all about. I want to learn more. So that's the interest stage. Okay. Then there's a consideration stage. So this is probably, I think this is probably the most critical stage in the whole process. Is this is where you're really seriously considering buying a product or service from an advertiser. And this is where now you're doing maybe price comparisons, you're looking at reviews, you're comparing the features and benefits with other products in the same category. This is like when you are seriously considering making a purchase. And then, of course, there's the purchase itself.
Which is stage four.
Which is number four. There's one that gets missed and that you could not use Facebook for necessarily, which is the post-purchase. And this is where you're following up with the buyer with some sort of messaging, or it also could mean when they make a purchase, they're going to have an expectation of what that product they're getting in the mail or the content that they bought is going to be. And if it doesn't live up to their expectations, you're going to hear about it. So you want to make sure that whatever you promise, you deliver, and also that you have a really good form for them to provide feedback for you and have great customer service. That's really, really important. So that post-purchase stage is really, really important. And also you can use the post-purchase for cross-selling and upselling other products. So that's really where you would use it for Facebook. You're not going to do, you can do reviews on Facebook, but in terms of Facebook ads, you can do it to cross-sell and upsell their products.
Okay. So how is the buying process different for B2B versus B2C?
Interesting question. Ultimately, it's the same because you're targeting a person. Even in B2B advertising, if you're doing a B2B advertising to an enterprise-level company with a million employees, you're still trying to talk to one person. You're trying to help solve their problem and telling them how I can make your job easier, how I can make you look better. And so it's really the same people. You need to think about it that way, that you're still talking to a person,
it's
not a corporation.
Person to person, right?
It's still person to person. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Now the motivations, however, could be a little bit different. So for instance, in B2B, people are thinking about, well, how can I look better to my fellow employees and to my supervisors? Or how can I make my job easier? Or how can I save the company money? Whereas in B2C, it's more about, how do I make my life better or easier?
Solve a problem?
For myself.
Yes.
It's very self-centered. Or it could be family-centered as well. How do I make life with my family easier or better? So people are motivated, generally speaking, by six things. And let's talk about that for one second. So one is greed. So if I make a decision now, I will be rewarded. So if I do this, I will make $100. If I do this, I'm going to lose weight. Could be fear. So it's the opposite. If I don't make a decision, I'm in trouble. If I don't do something, I'm in trouble. In a lot of cases, it could be altruistic. So if I make this decision now, it's going to help others. It's going to help my family. It's going to help my company. Envy. If I don't make this decision now, my competition will. That happens a lot in B2B.
All the time.
If I don't upgrade to this enterprise level software, this SaaS software,
My competitor will,
and they're going to crush me.
Right.
Exactly.
Like a little bug.
Yep. Yeah. There's pride, which is if I make this decision now, I will look smart, I will look better, I will look thinner, things like that. And then there's shame, which is, and it's the sort of related to fear. But if, you know, if I don't make the decision now, I'm going to look stupid. Mm-hmm. So people are motivated by that. So that needs to be considered not only just in general, but really mainly like when you're writing your ad copy, like take advantage of those emotions. You know, people generally make emotional decisions. You know, it's usually more heart-centered than logical when they make a purchase decision, especially consumers.
We make our decisions through emotions and then we post-rationalize them with logic after we make it, right?
Absolutely.
I'm watching my in-laws making a decision about a new home to buy,
mm-hmm.
right? And just from sitting in the back of the car on a road trip and listening to the conversation, it's obvious the emotions are guiding the decision. And then when you tip them off that the house is much larger than what their needs are, they post-rationalize that conversation, right?
Absolutely.
It's interesting to watch.
And rarely is the decision based on price. A lot of people say, oh, it's too expensive. Really what that means is I'm not convinced that your solution is going to solve my problem. Right. That's all it is. It's usually not price-driven. In some cases it is, but usually there's some sort of emotional connection that was never made, and so they decide to go elsewhere or not purchase at all.
I actually think it's a great topic. It's a topic for, I could probably do a whole nother podcast episode on why shopping for price in the video when you're looking for videos for your business is the wrong way to do it.
Yeah.
Because in most cases, if you shop by price for anything, your needs aren't met, but your budget is, mm-hmm. right? But that's a whole nother topic. All right. So how can you use Facebook to target different stages? Now, I know that if 2 billion people are on Facebook, if almost everybody in the U.S. is on Facebook and we all list what our interests are, that's naturally a way to target them. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So Facebook has, I think it's now 2,000 different data points that they reference in, and they kind of profile.
For each person.
Everybody.
Yeah.
They profile everyone. So, and they have quite a robust list of attributes you can choose when you're doing your audience selection, when you're doing an ad buy. You could do it by interest, by behavior, by demographic. There's all age, gender, location.
So profiling is good now.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is just from a journalistic perspective, we were trained that profiling was bad. Now profiling for an ad targeting is good. Is that what you're telling me?
It's good. That's the beauty of digital marketing.
I mean,
think of it compared to TV marketing. So in TV marketing, you might know that, okay, I generally need to reach women, so I'm going to go on HGTV or something like that. But, you know, I watch HGTV. I mean, I'm a 44-year-old man.
Pound it right here. I do too.
Exactly.
Chip and Joanna, love you.
Yes. Yeah, fixer-upper, of course.
We just both lost all of our cool guys.
I know.
Like that. Yes,
thanks for having me. Take care.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's absolutely great in digital marketing because, especially with Facebook, Facebook is probably the most powerful way to target. And that's really important in Facebook because Facebook used to be able to buy different ways. You could buy cost per click. So you're paying just per click. You're paying, you know, for impressions. You're paying for reach. Now everything is pay per impression. So CPM. So what that means is that you're paying for the ad to be served to someone, whether they click on it or not. So you want to make sure it's the right, absolute right audience for you. So you can use things like lookalike audiences to narrow it down, which means that you would upload an example of which would be upload a current customer list and have Facebook look for people that resemble that audience.
Resemble not visually resemble, like
no.
Everybody with blonde hair, but resemble by interests.
Yes, the interests and the behaviors and have they match closely with those 2,000 points of
super
data,
cool.
Basically. Yeah, yeah, Facebook has really evolved quite a bit in the last several years. That's an example of lookalikes. But again, you can also target people just in general without doing a lookalike audience. So let's say you're a yoga studio. We're talking about yoga earlier. It's probably going to be mostly women. It's probably women in their 30s to maybe early 50s. They're probably interested in other things like maybe mindfulness or spirituality or meditation or something like
or
that.
Or vegetarianism.
Exactly. Right. Maybe they like Whole Foods or they like natural grocers or, you know, some sort of a healthy food store, like mm-hmm. things like that. So that's how you would target that. So that's an example of, you're not using a lookalike audience, but you already have a persona of what your buyer looks like.
Going to look like my wife.
Yeah, exactly. And we would target people that are like your wife and like things that your wife likes.
Yep.
Yeah, me. Exactly. just like Todd Hartley.
And it's important when you're doing an ad campaign and you're targeting people to also align those six motivational different principles in order to make sure that you're communicating through greed.
Yeah.
That you have to have that baked into your ad copy.
Absolutely.
Right. And that your main message is going to be on the greed spectrum.
Yeah. So a little bit about that. My background, as we've talked about before a little bit, is infomercial marketing.
Right.
And as much as infomercials are kind of the redheaded stepchild of the advertising they're brilliant. They learned all the tricks and they learned how to motivate people. They learned how to manipulate people. They learned how to get people to pick up a phone or go online now and buy that widget for $19.95.
But wait,
there's more. Yeah, exactly. So I spent years and years and years in that environment. I absorbed all these best practices and now I'm finding that they apply perfectly to digital marketing, especially in Facebook marketing. So it just came so naturally to me to write this powerful ad copy for Facebook because I knew all these direct response principles from the infomercial world.
All right. I'm feeling a little Russell Brunson here. and for those who don't know, and for those that might be listening to Steve thinking that, geez, guys, that is all old news. That is an old style. It's infomercials. We're talking about the digital space and those skills don't transfer. We would disagree. And the reason is those old infomercials is the like benchmark testing, the science was all created there. And it's all with those who are the most successful transferred over from television infomercials to online ad copy for conversion. Do you buy all that?
Yeah. And actually it started earlier than that in the 60s with direct mail. I forget the guy's name, but he came up with this thing called the 40-40-20 rule. And basically what it meant was that the success of your campaign was based on 40% of it being your offer. So, call in the next 10 minutes and we'll save you $20.
Okay.
That's your offer. Like what do you want them to do? Your CTA, as they call it, or call to action. The other 40% is the targeting or the audience. And then the other 20% is the creative, like the creative element, whether, in the direct mail world, it might be like a nice outer envelope or a strong written letter.
Right.
But he came up with this in the 60s, and it's something that applies to us now back, 60 years later, right, essentially, in digital marketing, is that 40-40-20 rule. So I stress that to everyone that I work with, clients and colleagues, that still holds true today. It's all about the offer and the audience. If you can get a great offer that's going to motivate someone and you target the right person, your chances of success are extremely high. And people forget about that. People think it's more about everything looking good and beauty and kind of, they put more emphasis on the creative, and it's really not. It's really more about, at the end of the day, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
What's my offer? What are you offering me? What's the pitch? That's more important than anything else. Yeah, and I'm targeting the right person.
Without a doubt. I don't think you can be great at handling ads and targeting a very specific buyer without making sure that the creative and the copy resonate in the right way and also have the right science behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's more, and that's the beauty of digital marketing also, is that you can slice and dice and measure to a very, very, very granular level that you weren't able to do before. Before, when you were doing direct mail, you could measure to some degree, but with digital advertising, not only can you measure down to the actual individual ad and where it was placed on what platform and what device people saw it on, but you can also read results very, very quickly. You can test, and within a day, potentially, depending on your budget, you could learn, version A of this ad works better than version B almost immediately. So the digital age is, for a direct marketer like myself, the digital age is fantastic, because back when I used to do direct mail, it would take months before you found out if something worked. You test it, and by that time, you're already working on the next mailing.
Right.
And without even knowing how the first one did,
right,
essentially.
And as a 20-year, almost 20-year veteran of digital marketing, what I've come to the conclusion that I rattle around in my brain all the time is to question every assumption, even my own, even though I've been, you know, to around the block a few too many times in this space, the title that I'm going to grab isn't the right title until I've already tested it with the audience, and or maybe the call to action button isn't the right CTA button until the audience has tested it. And then the answers are always going to be inside those analytics. You're going to find out what's the one that really moves the needle. And if you are if you believe too strongly in your first guess, then you've actually put your entire campaign at a disadvantage. You buy that?
I totally agree with that. I was told by a former employer of mine years ago that never fall in love with a product. And I believe the same is true for never fall in love with the ad copy. You can feel strongly about it. I'm not saying you shouldn't have opinions. I'm not saying you shouldn't say, I think this is our best foot forward. But until you test it, you really don't know how effective it's going to be. And I think it's important to stress, Todd, that to everyone listening, that at some point you got to stop creating and just go out and test and see what sticks. You know, so you could sit there and I've had clients in the past that have spent days and hours and months trying to like fine tune and tweak things before they even test it. And it's like, that's great and all, but at some point you gotta take this thing out for a spin and see how it performs.
Okay, I want to give you an example on this.
Yeah.
And then after, I'm going to talk to you about, if you wouldn't mind, giving us some effective strategies for Facebook.
Get back to the topic. Sure.
Yeah, but look, you know, often I've shared with this audience my career and how I got started. And at the age of 26, I was a talk show host in Phoenix on KTAR and then shortly after KFYI. And I remember my big sister telling me that at some point you have to stop trying to be, or to stop writing, and eventually you've got to start getting out there talking, right? So for 10 years leading up to the first time I started a show, I had a micro cassette recorder. Do you remember micro cassette recorders?
Absolutely.
You old enough to remember those?
Absolutely.
Our boy Christopher over here, he's too young to remember micro cassette recorders. He's only been alive with iPhones and stuff. No. All right. So listen, you guys, I had in my back pocket, this is before cell phones, a micro cassette recorder with these little mini tapes. And I would every day give live reports wherever I was as a way of practicing being a on-location reporter, right? It's still in my house. I've got 60 tapes that of just whatever was happening throughout life. And eventually, like you said, you have to get down to actually doing instead of practicing. And the same is true with writing your ad copy, writing your titles, doing your creative, doing your ad targeting. Eventually, you got to get out there and start doing it. So let's talk about strategies. Would you mind giving me some effective strategies for Facebook ads and how somebody who's a rock star in that space like you does it?
Sure. One thing I want to mention, just to follow up with what you said, is the other thing that's important to note, and I have clients that don't understand this either, and I try to manage their expectations, is that you're also probably not going to hit it out of the park the very first time.
And to have the right expectations.
That first
for it, right?
month is yeah. really all about testing and optimizing and seeing yep. what works and what doesn't work and A/B testing. And so don't expect month one to be your best month ever. You may stumble out of the gates, but eventually you're going to learn what audiences work, what ads work. And then by month two, that's when you should be firing on all cylinders. So I just wanted to make sure that that was clear, that always have your expectations managed, that you know, don't pull the plug on your ad after one day because it's not doing what you expected yep. it to do.
Steve, I always tell new clients with ads that we're going to be running that we're going to learn cheap at the beginning, right? We're going to run a series of micro tests. We're going to look at the results. The ones that yield the best results, we're going to apply more gas to. But we're going to learn cheap, learn and learn fast at the beginning. The results will come, like you said, in month two, month three, and we're going to continue to iterate through the process, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk strategies.
Strategy. Okay. So going back to the awareness stage, one of the most effective things and one of the things that Facebook is really pushing to people to use now is their video options. They have a couple different ways you can promote videos. You can do video engagement as a campaign objective. You can also run ads that run videos. I've found for clients that at the awareness stage, running a video campaign is a really, really great way to reach an audience at a very fairly inexpensive cost per view. So as an example, I would say that between you're going to pay maybe 2 cents to 10 cents per 10 second view of a video on Facebook, which is pretty competitive. I'd say that's equal to maybe what you'd be paying on YouTube, but you're going to have a much more impactful experience on Facebook than YouTube. YouTube's great for awareness, but you don't usually get a lot of clicks from it. You just kind of build the awareness only. Whereas Facebook, you're not only going to build the awareness, but you're going to get people to click on your ad and find out more. So videos are great for the awareness stage. One of the things that you can also do is you can, as we talked about a little bit earlier, you can upload a prospect list to Facebook. So the awareness stage is kind of a cold audience. But let's say you're a company that, let's say your insurance company, and you get a lot of leads come in and they don't always close and turn into sales. So you have a prospect list. You can upload that list to Facebook and they can match it with known users. And then you can serve ads to them. And they're beyond the awareness stage. They're probably more in an interest or consideration stage. So you can serve them slightly different ads than you would at the awareness stage. At the awareness stage, you're really just trying to educate more than anything else. But at an interest or consideration stage, you're wanting them to take maybe a little bit deeper action, like buy now, get a demo, schedule a phone consultation, something like that. So you can
use... It gets more serious as they go through the process,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And then once you've made kind of that very first touch with on Facebook, there's a lot of different ways you can retarget them depending on where they are in the buying process. And Facebook's really stepped up their game big time in this area. They originally, when Facebook launched ads, the only way you could retarget it was by using like a third party, like Adroll. They realized, I think, very quickly they were losing out on a lot of money. So they've stepped up their retargeting game quite a bit. So you can retarget based on lots of different things, an example of which would be on video views. So I could say, I have a 60-second video. And it's been viewed 10,000 times, but I only want to retarget those that watch 75% or more of the video. And the reason you'd want to do that is because that implies a interested, engaged viewer. I mean, someone that watched most of your video were pretty interested in it. So I'm going to retarget that audience that watched 75% or more with now a more firm or harder offer. Instead of learn more, maybe it's not like shop now, get it, save 10%, get free shipping, whatever it happens to be. You can also retarget based on interaction with your ads. You know, did they click on something? Did they like it? Did they share it? Did they comment on it? You can retarget to that audience. You can do it based on web visits. So if someone visited your website and didn't take the action you wanted them to, they didn't make a purchase or they didn't turn into a lead, you can retarget them. Or conversely, let's say they turn into a lead, but now you want to try to sell them something. So you did like, say, some sort of a lead magnet offer, like a free, ebook, but now you actually want to sell them your course, as an example. You could say, okay, I want everyone that turned into a lead. Now I want to retarget them and sell them the course. You can also retarget people that interacted with your Facebook page itself. So they like your actual page on Facebook and they interacted with that. And then the last way is someone that interacted with an event that you posted, if you do event marketing.
Okay. What I love about retargeting, well, there's many things, but it's cheaper to retarget than to keep having to pay to touch people one time. And back in the day in sales, body language was our most important indicator if somebody was interested. Are they squaring up their shoulders? Do they nod like you're doing right now while somebody's, while they're being sold to? Are they following along? But attention span and being able to track how long somebody's looking at your product or service video is a covert way that is significantly more effective or more accurate than body language has ever been.
Yeah.
And now it's right at our fingertips. So I like the whole concept of retargeting and then segmenting off your list.
Absolutely.
Will you talk with me about that for a moment?
Because yeah.
Give people a high level overview. Like we talk about segmentation, we talk about dropping people into buckets based on what percentage they have watched,
mm-hmm.
and then making sure that you're allocating a higher percentage of your retargeting ad spend to people that displayed a higher level of interest.
Right.
That's
right.
So cool.
Yeah. So let's say, for example, you want to retarget someone that, say, visited your webpage, but they took no other action. So you might serve, they might be like, okay, so they were interested, but they didn't do anything. So I might say that they're like a C-level sort of prospect. We put them in that bucket. But someone that actually went to the page, and let's say they spent more than a minute on the site and they viewed two or more pages. And this is something you can look up through like Google Analytics, and you can actually create remarketing audiences for AdWords as an example using Google Analytics. That might be a prospect B, because they actually spent, they didn't bounce right away. They spent some time looking at, they looked at more than one page. Yep. So they have some interest in your product.
They were thinking about you.
Right. And then there's someone that actually took the action that you wanted. Like they turned into a lead. Yeah. So that's like the A. Those are like, and then if you're doing, if you have, let's say you're selling an expensive product, like a B2B product where you need a sales team, they're going to go after, they want to talk to those A people right away. So they're going to, those are the people that you're going to feed to your sales team. And even within the leads themselves, the people that turn into leads, you know, you can categorize, you could sub-segment those into different categories as well. Like if they have a small company, okay, they're not as important as someone that works for Microsoft. Okay, I want to talk to the Microsoft guy because I want to sell them something.
They got deeper pockets.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So segmentation is very, very important. And you can do quite a bit with Facebook. Facebook allows for a lot of segmentation. And then the other thing that's important to remember is kind of conversely, when you're building a retargeting audience, especially if you want to suppress people that already took that action, you need to add, layer that into your audience. You need to say, I want people that are net new. Let's say you're doing acquisition. I want to target people that are net new, but did not perform this particular action. And you can create those kind of custom audiences on Facebook and say, if they already turned into a lead, I never want them to see my ad ever again. Right. Or maybe you do. It depends on what your strategy is.
Right. If they saw this ad but didn't convert, I don't want to show them that ad again, but I'd like to show them a new one.
Right.
Right.
So maybe you talk to them about one pain point, but you're going to hit them with a different pain point this time with a new ad. Exactly. And you can do that with on other platforms as well, like Google AdWords, in their display network, for instance. You can do display retargeting and do the same sort of thing.
All right. I'm going to hit you with a tough question, so please forgive me.
All right.
Give us an idea of what it costs to, and I know it's hard to figure it out, but you know, kind of a ballpark for somebody who's listening that has a, I don't know, let's come up with a typical, they've got a product or a service and they are interested in using video. Let's say they've already created the video. What does it cost to get this video ad in front of individuals? And how does it vary between, you know, who you're targeting? Like what's an expensive ad and what's an inexpensive ad?
Mm, good question. On Facebook, it's, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, the cost of to build awareness. Let's say you're just trying to build awareness for something. Let's say the Kickstarter campaign and you want people to get behind it. And you just want to make people aware of it so they'll share it with their friends and that sort of thing.
That would be awareness stage.
It's more awareness than anything else. Yeah. So let's use that as an example.
Okay.
So the video cost per view, as I said, is going to be for a 10-second view, it's probably going to be between 2 and 10 cents per 10-second view, which is very,
very reasonable.
Very reasonable. It's, again, YouTube is probably going to be 3 to 10 cents somewhere in there also,
right?
Depending on, again, the audience you're selecting for that
as well.
And how
competitive it is.
And how competitive it is. That's another thing that's actually really, that's a whole other conversation we could have about.
Leave it to me. About ADD. I'll bring
about the bidding system within Facebook. Now, the price is going to go up the more narrow you get. So remember, before we talked about how you really want to be narrow, but on the video view, you want to cast kind of a wide net. And the reason you want to do that is because there might be people outside of your kind of core audience that you want to reach. And again, it's the more narrow you get, and let's say you only want people on Facebook to see it. You don't want to use their audience network or you don't want to use Instagram. It's going to drive up the costs quite a bit. And also the reason that you want to cast a wide net and is because you want to reach as many people as you can at a low cost. And then you can do that strategy that we talked about, is saying, okay, now I'm going to retarget those that watched a good chunk of it or more, 50% or more, you know, 75% or more, and retarget those with what I really want them to do. So let's say we're doing the Kickstarter again. So I'm going to now retarget that 75% with, hey, come support my Kickstarter campaign. And for just $10, you're going to get my product once it's released or whatever it is that they're trying to do on Kickstarter.
It sounds like broadcasting at the beginning, retargeting to narrowcast after a while, right? Because you want to ultimately sift through them and then skim the cream off of the top.
Yeah.
And then be able to allocate a percentage of your ad spend to pull those undecided yet interested people through a buyer's journey.
Exactly. It's think of it just like a funnel. So the funnel is wide at the top and narrow at the bottom. So the wide people are the people that are sort of looky-loos, but then as they become more and more interested, they're going to go down further into the funnel when they go through that interest stage, that consideration stage, and then the purchase stage.
Where do you get the looky-loos from? Like, what is that term from? It's a marketing term, yeah. It's 20th century realty or something. They used to do commercials about people that would sell their homes, and then the potential buyers would come through and looky-loo through their house.
I thought it would be cars, but yeah, I could see it. It's a high-end purchase. They go, well, I live next door. I'm going to check out my neighbor's house because I never went inside. I want to snoop around.
I want to look in their medicine cabinet.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is. All right, so let's talk about good offers, which are really call to actions.
Yeah.
And what's a good call to action for each stage in the process? And if I started off, if I understand correctly, because I was listening attentively at the beginning, there are five stages. The first one is awareness. What's a good call to action for the awareness stage?
Yeah. So if you're doing like B2C, as an example, learn more is a great call to action, just like find out more. It's a very low resistance sort of thing request. It's not like you're asking for their email address. You're not asking for a phone number. Yeah. You're not asking for a commitment. You're saying, hey, just check us out. Just learn more
or find out
or more. Yeah. Okay. For B2B, generally a good interest level, which also could be part of the awareness and interest, could be something like a white paper or an ebook, a webinar, perhaps something that's kind of, again, low commitment. Maybe all I have to do is give a name and email address. Yeah. And that's it. Like I'm in the B2B world. I'm willing to do that to get some sort of content that could be useful for me. So that's
I do it every day.
Yeah. So that's going to be a good kind of high level, like awareness / interest level, offer.
Okay. Super. Now then, the second one is interest stage.
Yeah.
What is a good call to action for the interest stage?
Yeah. And I kind of combine these a little bit because, in some cases, like you go from awareness to purchase in 5 seconds, depending on what it is, but, or conversely on a B2B level, if you're buying a $300,000, new equipment or something like that, it can take 9 months to go through the whole process.
And keep in mind, earlier in the conversation, we started with question every assumption, even your own.
Yeah.
And as you're offering this, under the context we already set up, which is test and refine, you'll look in the metrics. It'll tell you if that's a good call to action or not. At least you're giving people a good starting spot, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So for the interest stage, what would be a good call to action?
So, like, or a good offer would be like something could be like a product review, a product comparison, case studies, perhaps. Price calculators, those sort of things work really well. And the price calculator is probably going to be a little bit more B2B than B2C, but it can apply to both.
Sure.
And that's really, I would say that's kind of interest and consideration. There's a little bit of overlap between the two. There's also things like product demos, free trials, live demos. Mm-hmm. There's like recorded demos and live demos. Webinars can also be used down further in the funnel as well. So those sort of things.
And the reason webinars are further down in the funnel is people have already identified they have a problem.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not awareness. They've already come to some kind of understanding that they're in the market for it.
Yeah. Webinars are not good at the awareness stage. No, I'd say they have to be at least in the interest stage because that's a commitment, because a webinar is going to be at least 30 minutes, if not 60 or 90 minutes. Yeah. So by that point, they have to really want to invest that time.
I'm glad we're having that conversation. I think a lot of people miss that. Yeah. So then we just did interest and consideration at the same time.
Kind of.
Let's bounce to purchase then. What is a good
content offer, what is a good call to action or an offer?
So this is where my infomercial marketing experience kicks in. Like, buy now, save 20%. It's not $200. It's not $50. It's just $20. Free shipping. Get a free coupon. You know, buy one, get one free.
Right.
In B2B space, by that point, especially if you're talking about a big ticket item, it's usually a sales team. And so it's they're just having phone conversations and email conversations. You're usually not doing marketing at that low level of the stage in B2B marketing, unless it's, again, it's an inexpensive B2B purchase, like ink toner or something like that. Where at that point you're using more B2C tactics where you're offering discounts and things like that.
Yeah. Ink toner isn't an inexpensive purchase. As somebody who owns a business,
that's true.
I will tell you right now, that is some of the most expensive fluid in the world.
Yes.
Right. All right. Now post purchase.
Well, I'll have to do an ink toner podcast next week.
Yeah, I know
week.
That's big. No, I've got another one. I got a whole nother one just on ink toners. And so talk to me about post purchase, a good call to action or an offer. It's a tricky one.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people forget especially in the e-commerce world, that when someone has added something to the cart, Amazon's great at this, but there's other companies that don't do a good job at this. It's like when I purchase something, it's a great idea, especially even when during the checkout process, of offer me something else. Infomercials are notorious for this, or you call them on the phone to order your, you know, Ronco food dehydrator, and they would offer you like, hey, for $20 more, we'll upgrade you to the deluxe package, or you can buy another unit. Or you can expedite your shipping, or we're going to send you the cover for it or whatever it is.
Right.
Like, again, a lot of things from the infomercial world can be applied today. So upsell. And so upsells can be done on the post-purchase
stage
also. Right? Yeah, absolutely. So you can, let's say and Amazon's great with this. Every time I buy something, I get an email the next day saying, hey, you bought this coffee. You might be interested in a coffee grinder. I'm like, how did you know?
Right.
So learn from what you see out there. That's another thing that we could have a whole other conversation is look at what your competitors are doing. Look at what other people are doing and mirror it. They've spent all the time and energy and money on testing, and they know how to make it perfect. So copy them. So again, like if let's say you're selling a bicycle and it's an e-commerce purchase, and just I'm using that as an example, sure. Then you could offer them a helmet, you could offer them a warranty, an extended warranty, things like that. It's not so much common to do post-purchase things on Facebook, but I've seen it done. It can be done. It can work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm interested in that. I'm interested in how I'm already, like, if I'm watching an infomercial or if I'm watching a video in a Facebook ad and I'm already interested in buying, and then I see the cool accessories that come with it,
mm-hmm.
or if they're going to drop the cool accessory in with the purchase, if I make that purchase now,
yeah,
that to me is like knocking me over the fence,
yeah.
And I'm now ready, already committed, because
yeah.
I was kind of going to commit, and then they added and sweetened it up, and now I'm down for the count. Here we go.
Yeah, this is, and that goes back to like the greed thing. Like,
yeah.
Well, like,
oh,
if I don't buy this now, you know, or it could be fear, or it could be any of the emotions, but like, I need to take advantage of this right now. Otherwise I'm going to miss out. Or wow, look at all this stuff I'm getting for just $20. I'm getting the slicer dicer, and I'm getting the food dehydrator, and I'm getting the warranty for only for $20. Wow. What a bargain.
I actually watched I like late night infomercials, probably for the same reason that you do, because smart marketers can learn anywhere. And I like the science that's baked into infomercials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people talk to me, normally they're like, yeah, well, Todd, you know, short videos are better. And in my mind, I'm like, really? How long do you sit there with Netflix? You know, how long do you watch an infomercial? They're just crushing it left and right. The reason they're doing infomercials is because it works.
Yep.
And the science is really smart. Let's talk about Facebook. And can Facebook ads be used for an offline purchase?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like a gym membership or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've seen a lot of ads for offline purchases. It can be done really, really. Gym's a great example because...
Well, thank you. It was right here on my notes.
I know. I gave it to you, didn't I? But for example, like you could offer a free personal training session for your local gym.
Okay.
And it's really offline is going to be generally for local advertisers. So if I have a local gym, I'm going to create an ad that says, hey, get it. Hey, you in the Austin area, come to Joe's gym and I'll get you, you'll get a free personal training session. Click now. And that's where you can send them to a landing page where they, all they have to do is give them, give you the name and phone number and email address, and you get a free personal training session. And that's going to drive people to come into your gym and get that free training, personal training session. And hopefully your sales team can close them and turn them into a gym membership.
Yep.
So absolutely can be used for offline things. It's, you see it more. I see more ads than not that are for e-commerce and kind of online purchases or online event, like online actions. But there is definitely a place where for the kind of the local retailer or local provider to promote like an event maybe, or a sale at their store or something like that.
I actually, as you're talking, I realized that I recently ran my own Facebook ad for an offline purchase.
Yeah.
And you and I didn't talk about this. I probably should have consulted with you beforehand, but I was asked to keynote a dinner for the American Marketing Association. And I spoke to them like maybe 72 hours before. And they said, well, you know, actually we've never had a sellout, Todd, but we're close to selling this one out. There's been tremendous response. And so I decided, well, look, I'll do a Facebook ad. And I'll send people directly to that landing page where they can make a purchase and then go to the event. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being, if not every seat, there was standing room only. And it was their largest event they ever had. And for me, if I was going to be there speaking, and it cost me another $20 or $30 to make sure the room was full, it was well worth it. It's already turning into clients converting.
Right.
And so anyway, it's fun when you can use a tool like Facebook ads. Oh, and by the way, I targeted who my primary decision maker is, which are CEOs and founders of companies, mm-hmm, within 10 miles or 5 miles of where the speech was going to be.
Yeah.
Super easy.
Sounds good to me.
Right?
But the same principles still apply when you're trying to drive people to an offline event. You still want to have a strong offer. You still want to target the right audience.
Yep.
Nothing changes at all. You still need to give people a reason to get in their car or get on the bus or whatever it is, and go to that location to do whatever you want them to do. They still need a reason. They still need an incentive more than just like, here we are. You know, there needs to be you need to make that emotional connection with them, that why should I spend my limited time? Because people think they have limited time. Why should I spend my limited time to go to your store? It needs to be worth my while. Why is it worth my while? You have to convince people of that.
Yeah.
And that's not easy to do, especially in a small ad, but it can be done.
There's Christo and I are fans of sushi and poke. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's an ahi poke place that opened up right up the street. And they found us through Facebook ads. And when I got there and got in line and they just opened and I went through the line and the GM thanked me, I had to stop him and go, by the way, do you want to know where I found you guys? Through Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm like trying to like talk him into using more Facebook ads because people like us would have never known his place existed. But we're all on Facebook. It is part of our, you know, I even know people in my family that are looking at Facebook while at a red light.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way to buy time.
Yeah.
And if you can, like we had discussed earlier, use it in a outbound methodology of hacking their attention span, interrupting what's going on, getting them interested and doing it in an efficient way, it's a really remarkable use of marketing on a brilliant platform like Facebook.
Yeah. And you actually bring up a really, really great point about the offline marketing that we're just talking about, is that at the end of the day, you still need to be able to tie the new business, the sales, the leads, the whatever, right, back to Facebook. So asking that question is important. If you're not giving the person another way to kind of identify themselves as a Facebook person, like something like a free personal training session, you're going to already have their info and you know they came from Facebook. But, you know, if let's say you're the grocery store, like it's important to find out like, hey, how did you hear about us? Where did you find out about us? That feedback's important. So you can tie the revenue back to the spend. You need to be able to, in a lot of cases, for a lot of businesses and a lot of companies, they need to be able to show ROI. And if you can't show it, they're going to kill the ad spend.
I'm that annoying guy that is always concerned, maybe as a business owner, maybe because I'm responsible like you are for clients' ad spend dollars. I'm the annoying guy that always brings up the conversation in meetings. Great. How do we tie this back to ROI so we can present that it works? And if you're listening right now wondering how you connect the dots on ROI, Wirebuzz created a free mini course. It's a 5-part video mini course featuring yours truly talking about how we guarantee that our videos generate ROI. And you can get access to that mini course at wirebuzz.com/ROI. It is a very useful tool because at the end of the day, you will be judged or you will need to evaluate the effectiveness of your campaign as it relates to the dollars spent and the conversion that took place, right?
That could be a whole other podcast right there. And that was actually what got drilled into me when I was in the infomercial world, was because when I spend $1,000 to run an ad on HGTV at 3 a.m, it needs to make 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. Right. And they could measure all that. Even back before the internet, they were able to measure that by the phone number that people called and tie ROI to spend. And I learned at an early age in my career that that's really important. So when I work with clients now, 20 years later, I always ask them, great, just like you, how do we tie that back to ROI? Are we using UTM parameters? How are we finding out that our ad spend's actually turning into dollars for your company?
Hey, let's pull the scab off and talk about that conversation, because most time people don't want to, even clients don't want to have the conversation. But you know, as you've been with us for a while, you've watched the evolution of the company. And one of my goals is, you know, at my core, I'm a digital marketer. I was in digital marketing before video marketing. And I recognize that you can bring people through a buyer's journey in very efficient ways with the right digital strategy. And then if you use video, it's like pouring gas onto a fire. It just amplifies those tactics. But none of that means anything to a client unless you can prove out the ROI.
Right.
And in this world, there is a ton of video creators. Every kid with camera has a video in the back of the pocket. People that used to work at a television station are now out there competing for, you know, videos for online purchases. And so what I decided to do as a business tactic is to instantly differentiate ourselves and be an ROI agency that specializes in video, because all of a sudden what I did is I changed the conversation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And instead of being a kid with camera, it now goes back to where the rubber meets the road, which is all about, are you making money? How are you making money? And how do we amplify that?
Right.
It's a fun game.
And how do we measure it?
Yeah. Right?
Yep.
I hear people talk about Facebook ads and how Facebook ads are designed to be self-optimizing. And I know that topic confuses the hell out of people. So how do you explain the self-optimizing portion of the Facebook ads to people for the first time?
So Facebook, at the end of the day, they're like Google, where they want to serve the most relevant ads to people that want to see them. They want to serve ads that people are going to want to interact with. Right. They don't want to serve people junk. So Facebook has an algorithm, and it's very complex, and only the people at Facebook know exactly how it works. But
it's like Wonka Land, right? Yeah. Like only people at Wonka Land, the Oompa Loompas, know how things work.
Yeah, and so what they do is when you run the ad, they kind of determine how effective it is and how are people really interacting with it. Like, what's the click through rate? What's the interaction rate? And if they see that people are enjoying it and liking it, they will just automatically start serving it more and at a lower cost.
Win-win.
Now, conversely, if you're targeting the wrong audience or you have a terrible offer and people aren't interacting with it, it's going to cost you a lot of money. Your cost per thousand is going to be very, very high.
Because what they're doing is they're really incentivizing you to do it the right way.
Yeah.
And in a parental way, punishing you for doing it the wrong way, because you're really polluting their audience base.
Yes. Yes. The same. It's similar to how the organic Google
Absolutely.
Algorithm works, is they only want to serve you search results that people are in, not only clicking on, but staying on.
Yeah.
Because Google's algorithm has to do with not just clicking, but also staying on that site and interaction within that site before they bounce. Yeah. Now, I will say one caveat that with the one thing I really don't like about Facebook is on, just as an example, on AdWords, when you create an ad, you can tell AdWords, I want you to A-B test these two ads evenly until I tell you not to.
Uh-huh.
Facebook doesn't allow that right now. So I could create two ads, but they could pick a winner really early on and only serve that ad going forward. And the other one doesn't get any impressions. So it's hard to do sometimes clean A-B tests. There are ways around that, which we could talk about at another time. But that sometimes their best thinking and their algorithm doesn't help a digital marketer that really is trying to read two results cleanly.
Yeah.
Or two ads rather cleanly. And so it can be frustrating sometimes. But generally speaking, they do try to serve them equally up to a point. But then at some point, they pick their own winner and just go with it.
Right.
Most often than not, they're usually right. But sometimes you really want to try the other ad longer. And the only way to really do that would be to turn off the ad that's working and only run the ad that's not working. And that's the only way to really do it. But generally speaking, their self-optimization, it works really, really well. And in most cases, like their auto-bidding works pretty well. It's usually pretty effective. But
and we're just getting started.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Now, I mean, the way it's going to be in a year from now is going to be even slicker and more efficient.
It's going to be slicker and more efficient. I will say to those of you that are planning on, those of your clients that are going to run media during the holiday season, it's going to be really competitive. Very, very competitive because you have everyone who's promoting anything for Christmas or Valentine's Day or you know, the kind of the Q1 like weight loss category. Very, very competitive. So if you want to still see your ads showing, I recommend actually starting in around October, switching from an auto bid to a manual bid and bidding kind of on the high end of the range they give you. When you do a manual bid, Facebook kind of says, well, you need to bid between $3 and $5 to be competitive.
Yep.
I would pick the $5 or maybe even go higher than that just to make sure your ads are going to get served, especially if you are trying to also do a holiday push yourself and you want to get in front of people. The inventory is going to run out super fast. So you need to be very competitive. Otherwise, you're just going to get eaten alive during the holiday season.
Be prepared in advance to be competitive.
Yep.
Get out there and adjust early.
Yep.
Right? So you can get the results that your company needs.
Absolutely.
It's really interesting. Well, he's Steve Hetrick. He's the director of advertising here at Wirebuzz. Steve, for people that are when is the right time to discuss your ad spend? Does that happen after the videos are created? Does that need to come up earlier? Where do you see it fit into the process?
I would start the conversation as soon as you can, essentially. So when you're talking to the Wirebuzzes or whoever you're having do your videos, I would be talking to them and say, hey, we're planning on using this for broadcasts.
Yeah.
Not just our website or whatever our initial idea is for, but we want to run Facebook ads and we need to make sure we have like maybe 30 and 60 second videos that are designed for that use, which means they kind of have to tell a little bit different story than like a 2 or 3 minute video. As you know, it needs to be tighter. It has to be more powerful. It has to get to the point. It has to be kind of treated like a commercial, like a traditional 30-second commercial. So that conversation needs to happen very, very early on, not just on the video side, but also on, you need to think about, okay, once someone clicks on the ad, where do they go? Where are we sending them? If you have a particular offer, we need to build a landing page that's kind of ties that user to that offer. Sure. We want the user to have the experience they're expecting when they click on the ad. If we just send them to a homepage and they don't know where to go next, we're wasting money. So we have to be thinking about all these things well in advance so we can have it all ready. So when the videos are ready, we can hit play and go.
Okay. I like it a lot. Most marketers wing it.
Yep.
In almost everything they do, because they could wing it when it was print or television or radio. In the digital space, if you want it to be successful, everything needs to be mapped out at the beginning.
Yep.
People who wing it are ones that aren't going to track back ROI. They're people who aren't going to have to go to a boss and defend the budget. And if they do have to defend the budget, they hope that topic never comes up.
Right.
And so when a client comes to us, what we really want to do is map all that out, including the ad spend at the beginning. And part of my job as the host of this podcast and the video series is to make sure that I ask the questions that I may already know the answer to, but at least ask it so the audience can get the information. When you're planning a video that's going to be used for like a Facebook ad, do you need to be concerned about time, like 15-second, 30-second, 60-second ads? Or is that a construct of a television and radio format?
Yes and no. So Facebook has a offering that's called like an in-stream video, which is essentially like a pre-roll or mid-roll, which can be no longer than 15 seconds. So it's good to have a short video if you have one available.
For mid-roll.
For what they call in-stream, which in-stream, could be anywhere, yeah. Really. For their video engagement platform, you could technically have a 30-minute video, but no one's going to watch it on Facebook. So I always recommend that I would try to keep it under 2 minutes, under 1 minute's better, and 30 to 60 is kind of, I think, that magic space where you want to be, is 30 to 60 seconds. Because think about it. I mean, I know you're a busy guy. I'm a busy guy. I don't have time to watch a 30-minute video. It's just not going to happen in today's day and age. Unless it's a topic I really, really care about, it's just something that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
You basically have about 60 seconds to get my attention, and after that, I'm done. So you need to think about that. You have to think about the people's attention span. And you also have to think about how you have to grab them in that first like 5 seconds.
Absolutely.
You have to, just kind of like the ad copy, you have to have a really good visual, a really good strong CTA. And in the first 5 seconds, you have to make them want to watch the rest of it. That's the goal of the video, is to make them watch more. And then to take that next step, whatever it is, click here to learn more.
So not every video is a watch the video, buy at the end of the video.
Right.
It's not a harpoon. Some of them are the beginning of a buyer's journey.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
It's hard for people to get their head around that.
Yes. Yes. One video is not going to serve all.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, see, he's Steve Hetrick. He's a brilliant advertiser online. He's a member of the Wirebuzz team. Steve, a real honor to have you in studio with me today.
Todd, thanks so much. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. And let's do it again.
Right. I look forward to it.
All right.
Steve, thanks again.
Thanks, Todd.
Well, it's interesting to me when we're starting to think about ads, the big takeaways are make sure you have that conversation at the very beginning. Often the ad that you're going to tee up is not the ad that's going to be on the landing page. And that landing page needs to be mapped out in strategy. What are the other additional assets you're going to be sharing? And if you're retargeting to people, what are those additional pieces of content that you're going to use to move people along the yellow brick road to the buying decision? And when they make a buying decision, how do you get back in front of them with a upsell post-purchase? All of those things need to be mapped out. Who your target is, what their interests are, need to be baked into the video copy and into the call to action. And like Steve mentioned, you also have a really important responsibility to understand how your target audience, that interest group, what they're motivated by. There's six things: greed, fear, altruism, envy, pride, shame. Those are the six, all right? And as you're putting together the copy, and when you're creating each of the elements, you have to understand how all those elements come together in order to boost ROI. At the end of the day, none of this is worth anything if you can't demonstrate that you can replicate a very high ROI. Because often, you guys, there are people that bring us products that are priced wrong for any of this. Hey, Steve, you're still in the studio. Come back up to the mic.
Yep.
Do you see this often? Product that's got the wrong price for an ad spend?
Oh,
and you're like, oh man, I can't even help you.
Yeah.
Right.
Or their margins are just terrible. Like it sells for $20, but it costs them $12 to make it. It's like they have $8 margin that includes the ad.
And it's going to take them maybe $15 in ad spend to get that conversion.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes things just from the beginning are just not meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming back in. I've never had a guest leave and then I pull them back in, but that was great.
I can teleport now. It's awesome.
He's Steve Hetrick. I'm Todd Hartley. If you want to figure out how to guarantee ROI on your videos, again, go to wirebuzz.com/ROI. And this is episode 118. So if you want to get access to the show notes for this episode, all you have to do is go to wirebuzz.com/118, and you'll get access to information that we discussed during this podcast. Anyway, on behalf of Steve, myself, Christo, and the Wirebuzz team, we wish you a very profitable use of video with Facebook ads, and we hope that you understand the different stages, the complexities, and the techniques in order to prove out ROI. All right, peace out the next episode. Episode 119 is going to be the latest news in video marketing. Oh my gosh, I've got a huge list of some of the most important digital marketing news that you need to know. And like we do with every news episode, we're not just going to tell you the news. We're going to connect the dots and show you how to use that information to amplify your business. Because at the end of the day, it's all about you becoming a video marketing master. Peace.